Hello and welcome to On Mic with me, Jordan Rich. This is a podcast dedicated to meaningful and entertaining conversation with creative people from my particular field, which is broadcasting and voiceover, to actors and writers, directors, and yes, musicians. Today, I'm going to talk with one of my favorite singer-songwriters and one of my favorite people, Linda Chorney. Go to lindachorney.com, that's C-H-O-R-N-E-Y, lindachorney.com, and you'll want to read more about this remarkable lady who is, as I say, a musician's musician with a unique story. You'll hear in our talk about how she was the first independent artist to receive a Grammy nomination for Best Americana Album back in 2012, how that happened, and what some in the industry tried to do to her. It's such a compelling story that Linda wrote and produced a film called When I Sing. And she's also the star. The movie is one you should definitely make a point to see. So ask for your local theater groups or film festivals to book it immediately. And to give you a sense of the film, let's play the audio version of the trailer, which is really cool.
This is for the 99% of us that are sitting in the corner of a bar wondering if anybody's listening.
I've been chasing the dream for 30 years. I thought I would have made it by now. There've been good guys and bad guys, and ups and downs. Hey, it's a living.
I'm missing the boat.
And after all, I made history. What? I did.
Who in the universe is Linda Chorney?
I started playing piano at 4, switched to guitar at 10, always wanted to be a rock star. But now here I am, back in Vail, single again, after screwing up several relationships.
Warm them up for you.
Why don't you blow on him? It's the only action you're going to get tonight.
Those beautiful blue eyes would not distract the fact that you're an idiot.
You cannot keep doing this. How are you going to support yourself?
Linda, I want you to do the album of your dreams, and I want to finance it.
What?
Yeah! We're having a baby!
I was like a kid in a candy store. This is my last album.
Best album you've ever done. We gotta market it, and we gotta get it to all the labels.
Yeah, right. Like Sony Music wants to sign a 51-year-old woman.
Maybe they have a menopausal music division.
What if you put it in the Grammys?
I told you 6 months ago
that you needed to get some contacts.
I have as much chance of getting nominated as I do getting pregnant.
You know, it was a Hail Mary. We tried.
You did it? You made it?
You know you don't belong in this. You know you're a joke, right?
They're clearly trying to f*** you.
Winner is...
No one can hurt me.
You sang in bars your whole life. Why don't you just go back to singing in bars? It seems to be working for you.
Is it so wrong to believe that you can make it to the top?
No one can hurt me when I sing.
And now enjoy a conversation with a truly special performer, Miss Linda Chorney. Oh boy, I'm talking with the star of her own movie. How cool is this? Welcome, lovely Linda.
How cool? You mean how self-absorbed? I'm the star of my own movie.
All right, I didn't want to go there. But for someone who wrote Who the Bleep is Linda Chorney, and I'll make that the clean version, and has done so much to promote yourself, why not make a movie, right?
Why not? Exactly. It's a good story, right?
Well, I love the film. I saw it in Boston in the New England area. I was so impressed with the quality of the film. But let's go back a little bit for the benefit of those in the audience who have not seen it yet and who don't know the story. It's really based on your life as a musician in one particular award ceremony. Why don't we talk about what the status of the event is?
Oh, that little event?
Yes.
Yeah. At age 50, after playing in bars for 30 some odd years and almost making it, but not making it like most of us, miraculously, I was nominated for a Grammy as the first independent artist without a label or a publicist or a manager. And I was like, oh my God, I finally made it now. But little did I know that the gatekeepers of the industry who did not profit off of my nomination were not quite as thrilled. And therefore, they fabricated a story that I had somehow cheated to get nominated, and it was very hurtful.
Yeah, the story is dramatic because here you are living a dream, and we'll explain how the word got out because it's social media involved. But you're living the dream, and then people are trying to shoot that dream down. So tell us how the nomination got there in the first place.
Well, my husband forced me to put the album in. And the album was an extraordinary album. It was my sixth album, if I may say so myself. It was extraordinary because I had a dream budget with dream musicians that every musician would dream about having. And I've used the word dream now four times, and that will be it. It was just incredible that this doctor, Dr. Jonathan Schneider, who is a musician himself, but he makes his living as an anesthesiologist, but he's a real supporter of the arts and loves music. And he believed in me enough to offer me a budget that was five times anything I've ever spent before on an album. And therefore I had carte blanche on the best. And this album was really strong. And my husband said, well, what are you going to do with this? I said, what do you mean? I'm going to sell it at my shows. What do I always do? He says, well, why don't you put it in the Grammys? I heard there is an online site where you can communicate with voting members. And I said, what, do they have a menopausal music award? And so anyway, he made me put it in, and I actually got nominated, and it was quite an honor.
Let's back up a little bit, because the film, which is called When I Sing, is very, very well produced, and it actually stars, besides yourself, some actors will recognize, one in particular who plays the rock doc. Tell us about that actor.
Oh, Chris Mulkey. I mean, how lucky were we to have Chris Mulkey in our little low-budget film? I was just completely blown away and so grateful that he really loved the script. We should get him on the show. Yeah. But he's a musician himself. So he understood what it was like to be in my shoes, and he dug the screenplay. And in fact, he nailed the rock doc. And let me tell you how we did that. This is what a pro this guy is. He went and Skyped the actual rock doc for an hour, got to know him, got his mannerisms, his little idiosyncrasies physically, and he killed it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, he's a name, and maybe not the name, but a face that everyone listening will know when they see the film. Chris Mulkey is a very well-known character actor, and I did meet the actual rock doc at the premiere, and it was really cool to see the guy who was portrayed up there. I mean,
What did you think?
I thought the performance was terrific. And of course, I'm talking to the woman who played herself. When you're playing yourself and doing all this work and writing and producing and all that, I always wonder how people direct themselves or have themselves appear or lit or whatever, because every frame is about you. How did you manage to get this thing done the way you did it and so beautifully?
Well, first of all, I couldn't have done it without the director who got all those frames properly executed, Robin Russin, who we call it an odd cousins film because he is my cousin, not by blood, but by marriage. And he's a Rhodes Scholar and I'm a Miami dropout. So thus the odd cousins. Yeah. And he had the belief in this story so much so that he took a semester off of teaching at University of California, Riverside, and directed this film with only his heart and not a paycheck.
If anyone sees the film and doesn't think that this is a movie that has nothing but heart and spirit and inspiration, I shouldn't say nothing but all of that and more, because it really looks like a labor of love. Everyone seems to be having a great time, including the actors, some of whom play family members, and some of your actual family members are in the movie.
Yeah, I had a blast with my real family members, but I'll be honest with you, it was not the easiest thing to film. We weren't having a blast the whole time, simply because with a very low budget, you are stressed for time. I was wearing many hats. Everybody was wearing more hats than normal. And therefore, it was a bit stressful getting it done within the budget, which we did. But it would have been a heck of a lot easier with the luxury of more people on hand. And of course, it's my story too. So I think if there's a medal to be given to anybody, it should be to Robin for putting up with the backseat driver director, who was me. I know the story. I know each character, you know, and I want to respect who that person really is. So I, you know, if you were just looking at it in terms of an entertaining piece, then sure, he could direct the people a certain way. And he's a brilliant director and he's very patient. But for me, it was like, that person really isn't like that. And I can't portray him like that because I have a certain obligation to the real person. Mm. So that made it more difficult, honestly.
Amazing how many scenes there are. And I count scenes sometimes in a film because I'm curious how the production unravels and how it all came together. And this movie is everywhere. I mean, you're shooting everywhere, dozens and dozens of cuts within scenes. Put it this way, it looks more big budget than low budget at times.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, fortunately, I have friends and because I can wear certain hats. For example, I couldn't have done it also without my husband, Scott Fadnick, because he and I were like a two-man team on a lot of the location shots. It was just he was there with me and the camera and like, okay, let's shoot. Let's hurry up and shoot this before somebody comes along and yells at us. You know, a lot of the stuff in certain areas I won't mention. But we did get the proper permits for the places we needed permits for. But we just, the two of us went around and did a lot of the, I guess in they call it B-roll in documentaries. But I learned that they don't use that term. It's actually establishing role or something like that. But we had a lot of really cool footage for not a lot of money.
What's been the reaction, Linda, from people in your line of work, the musicians? I mean, I'm not a professional musician. I'm obviously in broadcasting and acting and so forth, and I got a lot out of it. Have you had a chance to talk to your friends and colleagues and even people you don't know who are in the biz and what they think of it?
Oh, well, that's the most rewarding part. You know, I may not have made back my investment yet because I did spend my life savings making this. It's a passion project, and if it's the last thing I do, I'm going to get the truth out about what happened to me. Plus, like I said, it's a hell of a story. But to have musicians, and not just musicians, actually, but to have them come up to you in tears after the film saying, oh my God, you've inspired me. It's never too late. Never give up. I'm not too old. Thank you for this journey. You touched a part of my life that is me. So it's not just my story. It's many people's story. And that's, I think, why it is touching so many, as you say, sweet chords.
Even before the film, and I've known you for several years now, we've done radio together, and I finally got a chance to meet. I was thrilled when we saw the film together. But even before the film, you've been on this road to recognition, fighting for every chance you could get as a struggling musician. Just talk a little bit about who you are, where that moxie comes from, because you do have some stones to get out there and do what you do and be as forward as you are. A lot of people don't have that inner light, shall we say.
My husband calls it a certain part of the anatomy.
Well, I said stones, so maybe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, big stones.
Big stones, yes.
First of all, I believe in myself. I believe in what I do, you know, and I know that I'm good at it. Although all of the us artists, just people in general, love validation for their work. It feels good. It's like a drug. And if you try to poop on my parade when I'm high off of my accolades, you're not going to put me in a corner. And that's why, you know, so many wrongdoings in life happen to people. Fake news, the real fake news, not the fake news,
right,
that people just, you know, want you to believe is fake, but is actually real. But people who are wronged. And I'm like, son of a gun, if it kills me, I'm going to tell this story because it's my legacy, really. And, you know, we're real people. I think celebrities, which I am not one of them, but I started feeling empathy for celebrities who get put under a microscope and the littlest thing they do gets blown out of proportion. It can ruin a career.
Yeah.
I think some publicists need to get a life. Ooh! that's going to score big.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because in this era of Twitter and explosions on TMZ and all these things, you're absolutely right. And here you are trying your darndest to get a little recognition for a great album. Emotional Jukebox is the album we're talking about. You're lucky enough to get involved in the Grammys, get some attention, and then you've got these people who want to knock you down. So to get your back up, I don't see why not.
Yeah, well, this is I consider this the Rocky story for the indies.
That's a good way to put it, and it ties movies in with music very beautifully. Thank you. That's terrific. In terms of your career, as you say, put out several albums, you've played all the clubs all over. Is your goal to do bigger venues, to tour, to do the live thing, or are you really hooked now on producing movies and doing this kind of thing?
Well, it's funny you mention that. You know when you have the same car your entire life, and then all of a sudden you get into a new one, and you're like, oh, I kind of like this one now. I've ridden that one the whole time. Sure, I want to play big stadiums, which I've opened for a bunch of majors before, and I love that kind of venue and where you get paid well, because a lot of musicians get screwed on getting paid these days. Do I sound bitter or what, Joe?
No, you sound like Linda. That's okay. Keep going.
Synonymous. I just got back from directing a sitcom called The Casino Boss in Carson City, Nevada. And like I said, I was a backseat director on my film. And I actually kind of like directing. I also edit out of survival mode. You know, they say if somebody who wears a lot of hats in a film, it's frowned down upon because, oh, yeah, they did all this themselves. It's like I didn't have a choice. But I really love making movies. I mean, I love it. I see it in the lens. You know, I see the frames, mm-hmm. and I love getting a good performance out of people. I had the fortunate situation where Joe Piscopo was watching me direct the scene in Carson City, and he came up to me and goes, wow, you got so much energy, man. I love the way you just light up the crowd and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm just used to being on stage as a performer, so when you're directing in a way, you know, you want everybody to feel comfortable, although, you know, you have to be hard sometimes to get the right performance out of them.
Right.
But I love directing. As somebody said, it's a job where you get paid to tell people what to do and then they thank you for it.
You know,
how can you not like that?
Absolutely. And I think it's great that you're expanding your horizons because you've proven you can do it. And I don't know why this just flashed into my head. I was going to bring up something very Boston-centric in a moment. But one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when you finally get a chance to sing the anthem at Fenway Park. And because I was talking about big venues, it doesn't get much better than that, right? In terms of a local girl from Sudbury, a Sox fan, getting a chance to do that.
That was better than the Grammys. It was. It was awesome. That moment, I'll never forget that moment. And thank goodness Scott was recording it on the field, because otherwise I wouldn't have it. And that's probably some of the most valuable footage in the film.
It just gave you chills because, you know, I've been to Fenway a million times and I've always wondered what it must feel like to even stand on the field. And you did it with aplomb.
I love the smell of Fenway in the morning. It was great. And it does have a certain smell to it. But not only that, but boy, was I fortunate enough to have the Dan Lyons, who is the guy who hired me to sing there in 2012. He remembered me when I called him a few years later saying, hey, do you think I could come in there and just pretend I'm doing this sound check again? I'll just be bringing in one person with a camera and I'll be in and out of there. I don't need the sound. And do you want to be in it with me? And he said, come on in. I freaking got into Fenway Park and recreated my sound check. And I'm sitting there by myself in the red seats, you know, at the and just looking around and smelling Fenway. It really does have a lovely smell to it. And I was just like in awe. And so I'm very grateful to the Boston Red Sox for allowing me to go film in there. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Right. That was a great scene. And here's the other part of the Boston scene I wanted to bring up. And that is, you and I talked when you helped to fund the bronze statue of this poor, sweet child who was a victim of the bombing, Martin Richard. We can all go to YouTube and see some of the stuff that happened there. But talk a little bit about writing a song for something like that and what where it comes from, because it's a beautiful song. It's a song that really brings his life to bear and his import to bear. But, I mean, it comes from somewhere special, doesn't it?
Well, first of all, I just wish I never had to write it. There's a couple of songs I wish I never had to write, but that one in particular, I mean, I think we all deal with tragedy our own way. For most musicians, for most artists, writing is therapy. And without it, I think we would be more screwed up than we already are. So I went to visit the makeshift memorial in Kenmore Square, not Kenmore Square, in Copley Square.
Near the library, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. And I just couldn't sleep. I just could not imagine what it was like for that family to be in their shoes. And I cried. And I cried just for their loss, for their grieving. And at 5 a.m., I wrote the song in 10 minutes. I recorded it just on a phone just to get it down. And then I went to my high school reunion. And Jeff Davison, who is a classmate, I showed it to him. And I said, I hear children singing on this. And a lot of children were struggling during that time, too. It was very scary, like, you know, a sort of 9/11 feeling. Mm. And you, where you feel helpless and you want to do something.
Right.
And so Jeff got these kids on Memorial Day weekend. They came in during the holiday into a studio by this guy named Tom Holmes, A1A Studios in New Hampshire. And then I got a couple of musicians together. And let's see, Gordon and who else? Oh, my God, I'm sorry. And we recorded up there and got the kids to sing. And then I said, there has to be a music video. So I went and went back to Boston and we shot a music video. And I just pulled people off the street to be in it. And plus some of the kids who were in the recording. And then I was like, there has to be a statue of this little boy, and it has to be life size, and it has to be him holding his sign, No More Hurting People, which he was a bit of an activist himself. It was in a class where they were marching.
Right.
And you'd have to ask Bill Richard more information on that. But I didn't know that at the time. I just saw this beautiful, innocent little boy holding the sign, No More Hurting People. And if I had the blessing from the family, I wanted to raise money with the downloads to have the statue made. Mm. And then of course the music biz, and I downloaded enough for a cloak for a statue. However, my incredible friend, David Roth, who is a renowned painter, I mean, just absolutely magnificent painter of portraits, especially. And his oil paintings are incredible. And I said, hey, Dave, I only made this much. Do you think you can do a painting for me? You know, this will probably pay for the frame and the paints. And he's like, absolutely. And so he did this gorgeous portrait of Martin, and we gave it to the family. And we didn't hear from them for about 18 months. And then I got a call from the father 18 months later. And he said that, you know, till this day, I couldn't even say my son's name. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And then he said, you know, the song, it was as if you knew Martin, and we love the painting and we love the statue idea that, you know, this woman, Victoria Guerrera, she designed the prototype. I had talked to her about what I saw and she sent it. And I said, that's the one. And the university, Bridgewater State, where Mr. and Mrs. Richard met, they ended up funding the statue and it got done. And I got to sing the song for them.
I don't really know you, and I feel a little bit helpless. But when I look in your eyes, I see love. I read the sign you held up, your innocence and dreams. So lovely as you smile for the picture. No more hurting people, peace and love. I hope you hear me from above. Boston loves you. Boston misses you.
of Boston strong. Years is all we had here. What'd you wanna be when you grew up? A fireman or an astronaut? Maybe playing ball for the Red Sox. Well, young man, as it turns out, you grew up to be a hero, and your beautiful expression is etched in stone for all to see. Say no more hurting people, peace and love. Martin, I hope you hear us from above. I'd like to thank you for raising such a fine young man. We all never understand.
No more hurting people, peace and love. Martin, I hope you hear me from above.
And it does remind us of the impact and power of music to move us and to bring us back to some sense of humanity. So congratulations and thank you for that. And for all the other charitable work you do. I mean, here you are coming off as saucy and sassy, but you're really, really a softy, I know, because I'm reading about all the things you're doing along with your movie career. So you've got the sitcom, you've got the film. Where does the film go now? We're trying to get more people to see it. Isn't that right?
Yeah, we want everybody to see it.
Absolutely. So how can we get the ball rolling? How can we help? How can podcast listeners, first of all, they can go to the whenising.com website, but how can they?
Well, you can go on the site and see where I'm touring right now. Right now I'm four-walling, which means I'm renting out the theaters, which is when you came to the performance, and I'm actually performing when it's done. And that's a special ticket, and I'll only be doing that for a year or so, I think. And then, of course, the goal is to get distribution, but it's not to give it away. The problem these days, the model is, we'll take your film. We'll give you nothing for it. You spent your life savings on it. You just worked your ass off for 3 years on it. After we take back our expenses, if there's anything left, we'll throw you a bone.
Yeah.
And screw that.
Well, so Hollywood and all the movie industry is filled with stories like that, the little movie that could. I keep coming back to that. But I have a feeling this is such a fine film, and I'm not just saying that because you're here. It's a fine film with a great message. I think very soon someone who matters, who can make things happen, is going to move this thing forward. I sure hope so.
I do have a couple of people who are definitely taking it to the top, and hopefully they'll grab it. And here's the worst case scenario for the listeners out there, is that I will self-distribute. The indie poster child will do what she does with everything else and put it out myself. But I am hoping it's picked up. I am hoping that I get a fair wage for doing it, and that everybody can see it. Not because it's about me, but I think it's a story that is a cheap form of therapy for most of us. With dream. I used the word dream again.
You did. That's the seventh time. You promised no more, but I'm glad you did. It fit perfectly. It was exactly the right word to use. Well, it's been a dream knowing you and speaking with you, and being your friend is an honor and a lot of fun, too, I got to say. We're going to close out with your version of When I Sing, which really is a song that sums it all up, I think. It's a beautiful way to cap the film and to cap our interview. But hey, Linda, thank you so much, and may this movie and may your story live from sea to shining sea. I'm sure it will.
Jordan, thank you so much for having me on. Really, I'm not just saying that. You know how they say that at the end? I'm sorry, I have to end with this. You know when somebody comes on a talk show, the first thing everybody always says is, it's nice having you here. And they said, oh, it's nice to be here. Do we need to go through that? Can't we just get right to the meat?
Exactly. It's kind of like when I was doing talk radio, people would call up and say, thank you for taking my call. And I'm thinking, well, what else am I going to do? I mean, you're calling, I'm answering, so.
You can hang up on him.
Know me. I talk to everybody. Anyway, God bless, my dear. It's great to have you on the podcast, and we'll certainly be in touch. I know that.
Bye, everybody. Go see When I Sing. No one can hurt me when I sing. Hit it!
Life has been less than easy. I've been disappointed more than I care to admit. But I put on a good show of color to brush away all the pain. And I don't have enough fingers on my hand to count how many times I've been let down. But I found a safe place to go where I love hanging around, where I don't feel the sting. And there's just one thing that makes me feel as light child on a swing, but no one can hurt me when I sing. There ain't nothing wrong with being your own best friend. Even though sometimes you feel stuck with yourself, at least you'll be there till the end. And you won't walk out on you after you've loved with all your heart. And wipe the feet on your welcome mat, not bothering to close the door behind, leaving you broken in a draft, not even wondering to look back. See if you are still okay, never questioning how it ended up, how it ended up this way. And there's just one thing that makes me when I sing, when I sing, when I sing.